discussion of budget.
Okay, a call to order the House Committee on Education for June 3rd, 2015. Welcome. Okay, the first thing we're going to do, the agenda today, we're going to work Senate Bill 187A and then go to work set or go to the informational meetings and then go back to a work session at 2 o'clock. Okay, so with that, I would like to open up a work session on House Bill 187A.
Chair Doherty, I move, Senate Bill 187A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Frederick has moves Senate Bill 187A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Springer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've wrestled with this bill a lot because I think it's trying to get to a good place, and certainly protecting our kids' privacy is an extremely good place. I was under the impression when the bill came over here that there was more work to be done. Maybe that was a wrong impression. I don't know, and I wanted to see more movement. So at this point, I'm going to be a no. I hope that there's still discussion that can take place around this bill. But for those reasons, I'm going to be a no.
And
today.
I think during the interim, there will be. That's our commitment, just to make sure that there is more discussion during the interim. Representative Reardon.
And I would agree with that. I think, obviously, student privacy is critical. And also to maintain a good working environment in the classroom. So, you know, pop-ups and that sort of thing are obviously a concern. But I, too, am kind of disappointed in where this bill is and where we're at right now. And I'm really thinking more work could be done. I will give a courtesy yes vote to my esteemed chair.
Thank you.
And out of respect for all my colleagues that have worked hard on this. But I do reserve the right to be a no on the floor, and so I'm hoping there's...
Okay, thank you. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While I respect the ideas of the bill with the student privacy, I talked, you know, in regards to the amendments and my grave concern about whether or not the software companies are actually going to be willing to work with the state of Oregon... with the way the bill is currently written, and I am extremely disheartened at the idea that this bill is going to move today. I'm greatly concerned that it puts Oregon students at a disadvantage, and I really, really hate to see that. While I agree that student privacy and those things are important, I also believe that it is extremely important that all our students have every opportunity for technology and advancement that we can give them. We're 49th, and that's a shame, and I am just greatly disheartened that we couldn't move this bill with some amendments. Okay. So I will be a no vote.
Okay. And as I say, we're working on this in interim just because this is the last week to work on bills. Representative Barreto, then Representative McLean.
Well, I concur with the last three people that spoke. I'm going to be a no on this. And I think, you know, a bill like this, you ought to have everybody on board. And I think to pass a bad bill, get it to the floor, I think we've done too many of those in recent years. And I think we should hold it over.
Yeah. Thank you. Representative McLean.
Well, I appreciate all the comments that were just made, and I think that all of us up here want to make sure that students and teachers are able to do the job of learning in a classroom. And this bill has definitely two parts. One is the student privacy, which I haven't heard a lot of concern around other than the one amendment that we looked at that was on consent. But I do need to balance this conversation just a little because as a teacher that just came out of the classroom in June who have really looked at and or used or been around some of these apps that we're talking about, there is a time where there's not going to be a single student not allowed to use technology. What we're trying to figure out is what kind of technology with what kind of focus is actually the best to be used in the classroom. And I want to give you an example. In a classroom of seniors last year, there were times where we were using iPads, and we were using iPads, or we were in the computer lab using the computers, or we were in the classroom using an app that might be something that they could use on the smartphone. And so there was technology all over the place. but there was a situation where you needed to have them focused because you only had them for 45 minutes or you only had them for an hour and a half, and you had three lessons that you had to directly relate them to and focus them on. And what we're talking about is advertisement and or other tools that a computer that's not in that classroom or a program or basically a platform that thinks that they may know better than what's going on in that classroom, and so they're going to take the student and just give them other things. And so I think that this is a good starting place, and if there's refinement that needs to happen, it can also happen under some of these guidelines by the contract with the individual school district. And we're a market. And even if we're a moderate market or if we're a small market, but we're a market, and we should be looking for the tools that will actually forward education in a way that teachers and students can function in a classroom. So I don't see it as taking any technology away. I don't see it taking any opportunities away. It might take away a little bit of advertisement or another option for a different experience at a different time that can happen on their own time at home, on their own smartphone, or on their own computer at home. But I think we have to protect school districts, we have to protect schools, and we have to protect teachers, and we also have to focus kids if we want these higher graduation rates that everybody is working toward. So we need to make sure that this is not, it's not going to be something that's going to be a distraction in the classroom. So I thank everybody for their comments, and I'm happy to work with anybody during the interim if there are specific things to work on.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a bill that almost should be in the business committee because this does involve a relationship between vendors and customers, and it's a funny place for that to be the education committee. Nearly everyone is right in this argument, which makes this very difficult. Not often do you bump into things that are that diffuse, but we have that here. I have no idea, I really have no doubt that there are some changes that need to be made. But it is a relationship between vendors and customers, and I'd like to see it taken care of on that level between those two parties, with the legislature not being involved in that. I think all in all, as I reflect on the process, there should be some middle ground here, and I think it would have been possible to reach some middle ground, and I know what I've heard that, you know, this may not be through. But nonetheless, I always care about the process and how it works, and I think there was a position for some middle ground here, and I think we could have gotten there. But for one reason or another, we did not. We don't have that to deal with today, so I will be a no today.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other comments in the discussion? Representative Frederick, you can move along.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things I would like to respond to. One is that I am very pleased with this bill at this particular point because we managed to get something through the Senate that was a compromise on a number of things. And California, it is modeled after the California bill, and the market in California is pretty good size. I don't think we're going to find any particular restrictions as a result of that. I am also hoping that if we see particular issues during the interim, we'll be able to work on those and on those issues and see if there's something that is getting in the way. I also want to speak at least a little bit to the vendor issue. There are textbook vendors as well. We are dealing with an component of education that I think is important, that is a little separate from just a business vendor customer component. We need to be talking about how we're going to be supporting and keeping safe kids, and I think this bill attempts to do just that. So I hope that you will reconsider and take a look at it as we start to move along, but I will definitely be voting yes on it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none. Tia, could you read the roll, please?
No.
Representative
Hatt?
No.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative
Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
No.
Chair Gordy?
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. Representative Frederick, could you carry this on the floor?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Frederick will carry it. And with that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 187A and open up an informational meeting on nonprofits. One of the reasons that we brought up the nonprofits is that we had the Oregon Youth Division talking about different things, and there are lots of nonprofits groups that are working with kids every day, whether it's after school, whatever, all the programs. So I thought for an informational here, we could focus a little bit on some of the other programs that they have. And all of these, literally, nonprofit, not it's their own money. It's money that they raise. It's not state funds. So with that, I would like to... do they want all of them up here or just one? Okay, one at a time. Sean Andreas with the Circus Project. Welcome.
Hi there.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Circus Project is going first because we have to accommodate the schedule because they have a big show tomorrow that they are getting ready for.
Yes, they do. I will be there.
You will?
Yes, I will.
Fantastic.
Is tomorrow Thursday? Yes.
I hope so.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for having us today. It's a real honor to be here. My name is Sean Andreas for record, and this is Josiah Carr. He's a graduate of our programs and a professional performer, and I am the program director for the Circus Project. I think we have a small video. Can I just launch into it?
Sure.
I don't want to cut anyone off, sorry. I think we have a video, a short video, that kind of gives you an overview of what we do.
One of the things that I love so much about the circus is that your primary tool for artistic expression is your own human body. And there's nothing more fulfilling and satisfying and empowering than knowing that it's your body that is creating beauty. And you are the one that's making this art happen.
The trainers are giving me an opportunity to explore areas that I could never dream of or think that I could actually do, and they push me to levels I can't do on my own.
I really appreciate the level of intensity for each of the disciplines, the fact that I get to really specialize in something.
So we have an outreach component, we have a school, an academy here where we teach public classes, and then we also have a performance troupe.
Being on the silks is my happy place, and for Christmas I just want silks really bad.
In our outreach programs, we prioritize teaching life skills through the circus arts. It's important to us to teach determination and resiliency and self-care and self-growth, and it's incredible to see the transformation that our students go through over the course of the semester.
Two of my girls have been struggling academically and continue to have challenges, but their involvement with the Circus Project has boosted their self-esteem in like so many ways. Their teachers have been like, what happened? Well, they just feel better about themselves because they've been able to accomplish and challenge themselves so much that they feel like they can conquer the realms of education, and that's really huge and awesome.
It's really cool just watching them go from these shy, scared people to having this confidence that they didn't know they could have. And that's really beautiful.
In circus training, you have a physical, lived experience of setting goals and achieving goals. And you have a lived experience of resiliency against adversity. And to take students and to take ourselves through an experience of having a challenge and then succeeding, that's an intuitive, emotional experience that is so much more powerful than really any other life lesson.
But it makes you tougher. What doesn't kill you?
Exactly.
Makes you stronger.
Reminds me of that song.
What song?
It doesn't kill you, makes you stronger.
What's really powerful is helping them to achieve even more than what they knew was possible. And I think that carries over into everyday life.
The circus arts are an incredible tool to access the marginalized youth because circus has historically been such a fringe community and a fringe culture. So we find that it invites involvement from students that have felt that they're on the fringes of society currently. The Circus Project is in an incredible moment of growth. We're adding more performances, we're adding more classes, and we've tripled our outreach in the past year, which means that we're reaching more students, more marginalized youth, and more people of all walks of life that'll benefit from our programs.
Since the involvement of our youth at the Circus Project, their own stories have begun to unfold in really beautiful ways. We're so grateful for the Circus Project. It's a very important thing for the community support. Not only helps the program youth that they work with, but just so many other youth.
That was a fundraising video we made. So if you want to write a donation, I can. Thank you so much for having us today. I'm just hoping to tell you a little bit about the Circus Project and what we do and where we come from, and hopefully give you a little bit of insight into the kind of work that we do around our community. So we focus mostly in Portland, Oregon. We were founded in 2008 as a social circus. Social circus is a relatively young idea in the world, and the idea is, in short, that all of the things that you need to learn and to experience to be a success in the world of circus are the same kind of things you need to learn to be a success anywhere in life. And so those are lessons like resiliency or hard work, determination, triumphing over what you see as a risk. These are all things that you have to do to learn how to do a back handspring or a front flip or something like that. And when you learn that you can learn to do something as seemingly as impossible as hang from a trapeze and spin around it with nothing but your own body and some hard work, that's a really important lesson that we find students are able to take into the rest of their life, regardless of what avenue that is. So we started in 2008 as an intensive training company specifically for homeless youth. So the way that program would work is we would work with a small group of students 3 times a week, 9 hours a week, for the course of 10, 12 months, and we would teach them circus skills. They would form a company, and they would do their own shows, and then we would also pair them with social workers and help them kind of organize their lives in a way that would help them to achieve their circus ambitions. And I'll let Josiah speak a little bit more about that directly, as he's a graduate of that program. Our founder, Jen Cohen, she has a master's degree in social work, and she was also a professional performer of her own in the highest levels of circus around the world. And in 2008, she had this idea that circus might be a really great way to not only help this homeless population, but also they have something to offer to us as an arts organization. And that is a different perspective. And we thought that if we could help them, they could help us by broadening our perspective over what art is and what it can be. And that's largely been the case over the years. The question, why circus, or why circus as opposed to another art form or another form of athletics, is a great question. We get a lot, so I have an answer prepared for you. Circus is really hard, and it really seems impossible, but it's also really, really fun. And it has this magic way of teaching you that falling down is just a part of the way you get better. And it takes something as scary as failure and makes it a key to success. So what I like to tell my students a lot is that the only way you're going to learn to stay on the tightrope is by falling off the tightrope. And that's true for a lot of things in life, I think. And we hope to give that lesson to all our students. But not only that, it's a wonderful blend of the things that you learn as a member of an athletics organization, or the wonderful things that athletics education has to offer. You learn teamwork, you learn to care for your body, you learn all those wonderful lessons, but then you also get all those great lessons that arts education has to offer. Things like how to express yourself, or how to create something, or how to be in front of a group. So it's a really wonderful pairing of both athletics and arts education, and really kind of appeals to a lot of students who might not be interested in either one of them by themselves. So as I said, Jen, our founder, was a professional circus performer, and she has a master's degree in social work, and she had this crazy idea that maybe homeless populations would enjoy the circus arts and might connect with that. And it's not such a crazy idea like you heard in the video. The circus has always been a place for people who live on the fringes of the city or fringes of town, who travel from town to town, can come and be celebrated for the things that make them different or unique or weird or odd. And those are the kinds of things that when you're in your everyday life, you might try to put up a mask and hide those things. But when you're in the circus, like, you want to push all those things out to the front. You want to stand on stage, put those in the spotlight, because those are exactly the things that people are going to stand up and cheer for. And that's been a really powerful motivator for us. So we started in 2008 with this homeless outreach program. We did 4 rounds of that program over 4 or 5 years and had 100% success rate. By what I mean by that is every one of our students who came to us who was living on the streets, by the end of that program, had transitioned to a life off the street. And some of them have gone on to be professional performers or start schools of their own or teach. And some of them have not, but they've all found success and they've all found a way to support their life. Which is a really beautiful thing. They've been able to take that interest that somebody gave them and find a way to build a life that supports that for them. And that's ultimately our goal. And so in 2009, we kind of had this thought that maybe that wasn't a lesson that only this targeted population of homeless youth needed. So we opened up public classes, and we started offering classes to the general public for kids, teens, and adults. And then over time, we kind of realized that our program for homeless youth and our program for public students didn't need to be separate programs, and that in many ways running a program just for a targeted community like homeless youth only serves to reinforce that culture of homelessness. So if you only do special programs for a special group, they begin to think of themselves as only existing in that group. And so what we decided to do was move our program in a way that would allow us to do those kind of targeted programs to meet students from these communities, but then to bring them into our larger community. So we do specialized programs now. We call our High Flyers program, where we go all over town. We work with all sorts of social service agencies like New Avenues for Youth, PEAR, the whole homeless continuum there in Portland. And we bring 10 weeks of classes all over town. We go, we meet students where they are, and if they like it and they enjoy the circus, we leave the door open them to come to our gym, join a public class on a full scholarship, come to a special drop-in class just for them, come to open gym, work on their skills. Really anything we can do to help bridge that next step for them. And then from there, you know, we have a whole host of programs. They can join our training company and get really serious. And if they like, they can start doing gigs with our professional company, and that can help them get their feet wet. And then if that's their desire, help launch a professional career for them. Because in many ways, being a professional artist, it's that first step in getting someone to open the door for you that's really the hardest. So we've been doing these High Flyers programs for a number of years and worked with a number of really amazing partner agencies. And I can't say enough about how important that partnership is. So we work with groups that have this community, and we know that these students are already having a lot of their needs met, because we don't do basic needs. You know, we aren't going to help people find a clean place to live, a meal. What we do is we come in and offer supplemental organizations. And these organizations that offer homeless outreach, they can't in many ways offer the things that we offer. And so we all work together to bring what we can to the table to form kind of a holistic community around this identity, to serve in the ways that we all can. And so in 2014, actually just this last year, we thought that we could take this lesson to yet another place, and we started working in the local public schools. We started what we call our Circus in the School programs, which is where we take largely the same High Flyers program, but we adapt it to work with younger students and in a school setting. So now we're working at 5 different schools, 4 days a week, and we go to after-school programs in a partnership with Schools Uniting Neighborhoods, or the SUN program, that's all over Portland. And then they also work with some partner agencies like Self-Enhancement, Inc., and the Native American Youth and Family Center, a couple other, Impact Northwest, I think, is one of our partners as well. And so they operate these programs at schools, and they bring us in to teach classes. We go and teach anywhere from 15 to 30 students for an hour a week, and we do specialized circus training for them. And then just like with our High Flyers, our homeless outreach programs, any one of those kids who's in one of those programs, which is largely for low-income neighborhoods, we leave the door open to them to come join us in public classes with free scholarships or any sort of work trade that they need to help them continue their circus education if it's something that they love to do. This program is relatively new for us, and it's grown so fast. There's a lot of demand out there for it. Last spring, we started over at NAYA, the Native American Youth and Family Center, with one class. And then in the fall, we started a class at Boise Elementary in North Portland and at SEI. And the next term, we were at 3 more SEI SUN programs, and SEI itself asked us to do 2 days a week rather than one. And then in the spring, a couple of those classes asked us to double the number of students we're working with, which is really great. And then next fall and winter, we're looking at getting into a couple more schools through Impact Northwest. And so we'll be working with 6 to 7 schools throughout the year next year, which is amazing. And maybe as many as around 400 youth, I think, is our target for next year, 400 individual students who come through our programs. We do a lot of tracking of our students and collection, because we want to know what's working and what's not. Making a program that really does work and that really does help people is our number one concern. We don't want to just go and do somersaults, and we want to make sure students get things. So I can say with confidence that 100% of our students who take a class learn fundamental skills that we measure with checklists, things like handstands, forward rolls, cartwheels, juggling, partner acrobatics, all sorts of things. 90% of those students, 90% of the kids we work with tell us they want to come back and do more circus. And of those, 80% report that they've had positive changes in self-esteem, body image, ability to take safe risks. And then for our partner organizations, 9 out of 10 of them report that the goals we've set out as a partnership in the beginning of our classes have been met. So our partner agencies, we always meet with them at the beginning of a course, And we say, like, you know your kids better than we do. You know your community better than we do. What are you hoping that they can get by this? Why have you asked the Circus Project to come in and offer these classes? You know, what are the things we can shoot for? How can we get to that? And then at the end of our time with them, we always send them a survey and say, you know, ask them to rate us and be honest and say, how can this program be better? How can we do it better next year, next time we come back? What can we move in the future? And on that note, the Circus Project is in a big moment. We just moved into our very own gym, which is a big deal for us. We've been renting space at the Friendly House in Northwest Portland for since our inception in 2008, and they've been wonderful community partner to us and a great supporter of our programs. But they also have other things that go there, so we've only been able to get a certain amount of hours a week in the gym, which has really limited the amount of public classes we can do, the number of scholarships we can offer, and the types of program we can do. So we just moved into our own gym in Northwest Portland, which is a big step for us. We now have, I think we're going to have 61 classes next year, up from like four a term last year. So it's a big step for us. We're also able to do a lot more of bringing groups in to work with us. So when we go out to school programs, we do ground-based acrobatics. We do juggling. We do all sorts of fun prop manipulation. We have a tightrope that kids walk. But when we can bring them into the gym, into our gym to work on the trapeze or the aerial silks. I mean, you guys saw some of the kids up in the air there. It's a whole different level of wow. And, like, even the toughest kids, you know, they see that and they want to get up there and do it. So that's been a real game changer for us. And then working with homeless youth has really always been the core of our mission. You know, we make beautiful shows. We have a professional performance troupe. We train wonderful performers. But in our mind, working with that homeless population is really the reason we do everything we do. So, you know, for us it starts as we go out into the community and we teach classes on site at various community centers and we work with these students there. And our hope is that we invite them into our gym to take part in our community there, and then we train them. We help them follow, you know, what it is they want to do in whichever disciplines they want to study, and then ultimately maybe help them get a couple of gigs, put them in some of our professional shows, get them to work alongside professional performers so they can learn that professional respect and that that way of acting that you need to know in a performance world, and then hopefully send them off into the world to either go perform somewhere else or to do whatever it is they want to do in life. So this fall, as a continuation of our work with homeless youth, we're really excited that we're going to be able to, because now we have our own space, to bring in, we're going to have a special once-a-week drop-in class that's just for homeless youth who've graduated our High Flyers program so that they feel like they have a really safe, inviting place to come in and continue their circus training. I want to turn the table over to Josiah Carr here for just a moment. He's a graduate of one of our initial homeless training companies. And sometimes as an administrator, as an instructor, it's hard for me to connect the dots between how circus education specifically translates outside of the classroom and how that process works. So I thought maybe Josiah would have a great perspective to kind of inform us on that. So
push the microphone just a little closer to you. It doesn't have to be real close. That's perfect.
Okay. My name is Josiah. I come from South Carolina. I've moved to Portland to start a new way of being. In South Carolina, I grew up in one of the poorest education systems, and I was very aware of where I was.
And I for our professional record, I need a last name if you
Josiah have. Carr.
Thank you very much.
I left South Carolina to try to find a bigger place and promptly fell on my face in Portland. I was homeless for a year and a half until finding the Circus Project, which I can honestly say is the biggest learning education I've ever had in my life. I have been through the Army. I've been through a very tenacious public service system. This totally changed me. I realized that there are ways that if I continue with the Circus Project, when I was given circus was not just a couple of juggling clubs I could throw around. It was a continuing process that could be a part of that inspired me to go get a house, a job, to move on to find social circles, to be involved with the circus's bigger social circle that extends beyond the Circus Project, which I have attained unbelievable amounts of learning and life skills from. I currently live in Oakland, where I am a professionally maintained circus performer. I work with a number of different troupes. I'm self-sustaining. I have made my own way from literally ground nothing. Thanks to Circus Project. Again, I learned the application of skills from the Circus Project, not just things that they just tell you about. You don't understand why they're telling it to you until you're given a way that's varied enough as circuses. You can juggle, you can tightrope walk, you can refire, you can clown, you can do literally anything that you feel is good for you, and you can continue to change and be a different person every day if you wish. And it's because you have the ability to choose that the responsibility comes with it. You want to follow through with your decisions, and so you become better. I'm a hand balancing performer, and I come a long way just to support my handstands, just to be able to make sure that I have a body in good condition, I have a well-fed body, I have people around me that help stay in a good state of mind so I continue to feel like doing handstands. I do it all the time. I teach someone how to do a handstand once a week. It's the most beautiful thing in the world.
So if anyone wants a lesson, you know where to find it.
I'm really good at teaching it. I teach all age groups. I taught this person that was 300 pounds how to do a handstand over 3 months. They started very small and gradually lost 100 pounds just to do it. Changed their entire life. It's very easy, because once you realize that you have a vessel, you don't need to be an acrobat. You can be a stage performer. You can talk. You can clown. You can use whatever way that you like. You all are very enunciative. You're very good at words, and so you could go up to it and you could be an MC. You could tell the crowd what they really want to hear, because you know how words work. It's your art form. My art form is my physical persona and my presence. I get up on stage, I'm quiet, but I've learned how, just because I give it to you. I learned through Circus Project how to be a bigger and better human. I am infinitely pleased every day. I continue to inspire myself, others. I let others inspire me. I learned what that feels like to be inspired and to let that happen.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
That's wonderful.
If any of you would like to see Josiah perform, he's going to be a featured performer at our gala event, which is tomorrow night at 5:30 p.m. in Northwest Portland. I know you all have lots of things you do, but in case you have the evening free, you are, of course, welcome to join us.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions for this panel? Representative Peluso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Josiah, right?
Yeah, Josiah.
Oh, Josiah. Thank you. So, you said Oakland. Is that Oakland, California?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we would encourage you to come back to Oregon.
I want to get better and to bring to Portland a greater grade of circus than what I currently know.
Excellent. And I'll look forward to seeing you back in Portland then.
I look forward to coming back.
Thank you. Thanks.
Any other questions? Representative Frederick.
I'm sitting here smiling like crazy for a couple of good reasons. One of the reasons I came out to Portland was because of the Theater Elan, House of Pomegranates, circus, mime, clown company that I joined. So in another body, I was able to do the same kind of handstands that you were doing.
Yeah.
I am very pleased to see this continued and expanding. Do Jump Theater, mm-hmm. which you, I'm sure, know about, Imago Theater, both of those are the descendants of the Theater Lawn and House of Pomegranates.
Wow.
And the Hayes Marshall School, which was a descendant of Jacques Lecoq.
Right, of course.
And so that's the work that I did many, many years ago, 41 years ago, actually. Pleased to see it. I'm also very pleased to hear that you're in my district. Mm-hmm. The SEI and the Boyce Elliott effort is really important, because they need to see this kind of thing. I would just say simply that this underscores the kind of impact arts and movement that many of the schools do not have now, because they've either been taken out, or they're having to concentrate on other things. And I'm very pleased to see that you're doing it. I hope that you'll expand. And the address of your place?
We are at 1420 Northwest 17th.
Oh, there it is. Yep. Okay. Good deal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is it just the homeless that you're gearing this towards, or is it any youth that would want to come in and experience this?
That's a great question. The words we use are homeless and at-risk youth, which means a lot of different things. We do target specifically the homeless population, but then also we do work with genderqueer youth. We work with low-income students. Most of our circus in the schools programs are targeted at Title I schools. So really anyone that's might not be exposed to arts education or athletics education because of their background. That's kind of who we target with these programs.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you expanded at all outside the Portland area, or are you mainly just in Portland?
That is an ambition of ours. Unfortunately, transportation is often the hardest thing with working with a community like this, with at-risk communities. Organizing trips for them to find funding to come into the gym is difficult. Time and is a precious resource for most of these organizations that are pretty short-staffed themselves. We're looking at moving out slowly into the areas around Portland. We've got a couple of programs in Gresham and Hillsborough that are expressing some interest, as well as Vancouver.
I have a follow-up. Mm-hmm. Are you a nonprofit organization?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The one thing about this, and I think, you know, the educators know that arts is more than just an education, because so many kids that may not excel academically or athletically or whatever excel in writing, or they excel in painting, or they excel in something like the arts, or they can breathe fire. I thought that was cool. But anyway, and so this is where I think it's very important. So I appreciate Circus Project coming down. I am going to be there tomorrow night.
Excellent.
To see what the program is. But it's one of those things, that programs that kids can go to that don't succeed, and they excel and become stars. So I appreciate that very much. And thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Eric Johnson from Todos Juntos. And because our L.A. was in the Philippines for a long time, we even pronounced it properly.
It sounded really good.
Thank you. Here, too. Thank you. And make sure, before all of you speak, to identify yourself for the record.
My name is Eric Johnson. I'm the founder and executive director of Todos Juntos.
Okay. And you can just do your testimony, and then we'll have to get the names of the other folks.
Well, when I spoke with Richard Donovan the other day, he said, come show off Todos Juntos. And for me, it's really difficult to show off Todos Juntos without bringing Todos Juntos to you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. We're in rural Clackamas County, and I prepared a little speech right in front of you. And by the way, recently, in Clackamas County News, we were had an article written on us on the most recent June issue in Clackamas County. So that's there for you to read. Todos Juntos provides culturally appropriate services, and when fully funded, we are able to serve over 1,500 youth and families in rural Clackamas County. Our program delivery aligns with STEM and CTE initiatives and integrates research-based curriculum such as Boys Council, Girl Circle, Lego Robotics, and Service Learning through local steering committee meetings and at school administration. At-risk or core youth are identified for potentially failing in one or more subject areas and or have other social-emotional needs. Case coordination is provided by Todos Juntos site staff, and youth are directed to and participate in identified activities. When funding allows, all efforts are made to integrate core students in more universal activities involving a general student population. We cannot talk about Todos Juntos without giving credit to the PreventNet system, which is a system of agency collaborations that starts with Clackamas County Children, Youth, and Families Divisions, nonprofits, schools, and other agencies. PreventNet sites act as a hub of activity for partners, and together have the potential to provide a seamless approach to programming for all community members, and especially the most vulnerable youth. This, in my opinion, provides the best bang for the buck, especially in rural Clackamas County. As a cohort member of Tri-County United Way, this year Todos Juntos hires local teachers that know the students, know the curriculum, and know how to teach and to provide homework assistance to students in a homework club setting. This approach gives students the best opportunity to get the help they need and improve study skills, improve self-esteem, and improve grades. Over the years, our relationship with Clackamas County Juvenile Department has allowed us to provide service learning experiences to local youth, either mandated into a restorative justice structured service learning work project, or through the school, where identified students are asked if they would like to participate in real-life work experiences. Projects are not punitive, but rather take on an ownership approach where students understand the need for knowledge, teamwork, and efficiency in order to be successful. I have to read, otherwise I just get all over the map.
Okay.
But if you have questions, I'm a lot better at just kind of like, pinpointing those. Yeah. But having said that, I'd like to turn it over to Patty Zavala, who at one point in time was, I was in the trenches in 1994 in Clackamas County working as the Hispanic Project Director for one of the agencies, and she was one of my students years and years and years ago. And
not that many years.
for me, she still seems like a kid. But she's one of maybe eight youth that actually were in my program that actually worked for Todos Juntos over the years.
4 or 5 years ago.
Just 4 or 5 years
ago. Yes.
Hey, thank you. Make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Patty Zavala, and I currently work with Todos Juntos in the Canby area. That's Clackamas County. A lot of my job is to do direct services with the Latino community, mainly with the kids. As you know, being in middle school, it's one of the hardest ages anybody can go through, or everybody goes through at some point or another. However, with the Latino community, I feel that there's another component added. The fact that you don't speak the language, that you don't look like them or the rest of the population, the fact that there's all these at-risk behaviors that you are at a greater target or a target. So when I first came to work for Todos Juntos, I knew that I wanted to be a part of this great organization. I know what it did for me when I first became part of Todos Juntos a couple of years ago. And I knew that I wanted to help the kids in my community by creating a connection with the school, by providing, like Eric said, a lot of cultural specific services. We do girls circle, boys council. We provide a lot of sports, which in my district, the schools no longer provide. So we do soccer programs, we do basketball, we do Lego robotics. We have an open gym for girls in which girls get to participate in any and every sport available that they can think of. A lot of our programs are run with the assistance of volunteers. We've created a community garden along with the school for kids to understand and appreciate hard work. I am a believer in hard work, and I think that kids need to know that what it takes for them to be successful. We are also doing some parenting classes for the Latino community. A lot of the times the Latino community feel that or don't understand their rights. But a big part of what I'm teaching them is that they not only have rights, but they also have responsibilities as communities members, as parents, and as parents that are teaching this next generation how to be better human beings.
Thank you, Sam.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you. We'll wait till you're all finished, then we'll ask for questions. Okay.
My name is Shauna Johnson, and I am the coordinator for the elementary sites for Todos Juntos. I've been up in Sandy Grade School for about 5 years. We've provided programs for at-risk and universal kids from preschool to fifth grade. Some of the past activities that I've ran at the school was math interventions. We had Smart Start eating and reading program for kindergarten and first graders. We do homework club, keyboarding, science, art. We do taekwondo. We had some recreational soccer. And then we do an early literacy program called Smart Cats. We do girls' circle lunch groups and summer transition programs for fifth graders. Some of our summer activities at the grade school were swim lessons, field trips, recreation. We did another girls' circle that helps the fifth graders feel more comfortable at the actual middle school. We do a pre-K class designed to teach parents how to immerse their toddlers into print to help them be ready for the school systems. In that class, we actually ask the parents to come join us. We've done Safety Town day camps, and then we have a jumpstart into kindergarten literacy program that is designed just for incoming kindergartners. It's like a 2-week day camp where they come in kindergartners before they're actual kindergartners. And we also have utilized the federal food program, and in the past we've had transportation to and from because a lot of the at-risk families, they cannot get their children to these activities. So over the past 5 years, we've had several different funding streams, lots of cuts and changes, so our grade school site has had to change also. We now only serve 0 to 6-year-olds and their families, and we do not have transportation. In order to help the at-risk kids, we are providing an extended day kindergarten class. So these are kids that we have partnered with the school to assess to see where they're at, and then we ask them to come into our class. Right now they're only half day. It'll change next year because they're going to go to a full day. And they get a full day of kindergarten twice a week. So, and that one is called Smart Cats because Sandy Grade is the Bobcats, so that's why we named it that. And this program is based off of CHIPS strategies. I don't know if anybody's aware of CHIPS. It's called Children Immersed in Print Successfully. And it's to help at-risk kids be reading ready by third grade. So I currently have 20 kids in this program. We concentrate on reading and literacy skills, letter recognition and sounds and social skills. We're also hosting some play groups in the park this summer to teach interactive ways for parents to learn how to play with their children and also immerse them more in print. And with that said, that kind of goes into our parenting education. I'm the coordinator for our parenting education. We have it in 3 sites. As Patty said earlier, we have one in Canby. She teaches Adriana Portes. This is the first time we brought that curriculum in. It's been very successful, and that was just for the Spanish community. Then we also do Making Parenting a Pleasure in Spanish and English in Estacada and in Sandy. We do some workshops in the fall. They're like one-day workshops, and they are developed to give general knowledge on how the brain develops at ages and stages in their child's life and to help give them positive discipline tools and ideas. These have been great ways to get the parents to come back to our actual series that goes for 10 weeks. Kind of gives them a little piece of some knowledge that they might not have, and then they all want to come back. And it's been a great way to recruit parents. So the parenting classes that we do are 10 weeks. There's a series. And I'll just give you from a Spanish family that after taking the 10-week series, they came back and told us that not just did they get better parenting skills and their children were not acting out and they were more connected to the schools, but it actually saved their marriage. So it's like a huge thing, the parenting classes. You know, I really believe that parents are first teachers. So if you can go into the homes and make a difference, you're going to make a difference in that child's life in the schools also. So I also, part of my job is to help connect families with resources in their communities. So I send out monthly newsletters to kindergarten student parents that has parenting tips. I give them new poems every month, literacy games, along with resources in their community, and we do an OPEC calendar. OPEC is one of our funders. It's Oregon Parenting Education Collaboration. They're wonderful to work with. So I do a calendar so they know what's going on with that, too. I also help with kindergarten roundup, assessing kindergartners, literacy nights, ELL nights. We have a early childhood team that meets quarterly to discuss community needs and programs, and this helps us connect these schools to the community also. So we get a little insight of like what private preschools are wanting, and then the private preschools can kind of figure out what the schools need. And we've, by doing this committee, we've been able to bridge that gap between schools and the community and try to connect kids that are coming in, be able to give the kindergarten teachers a heads up, like maybe this kid needs something else, where in the past we couldn't do that. They just showed up, and then it took them 2 months before they could figure out what the child needs. Right now we have a 100% success rate with our core kids showing progress in academics. So we measure this with a pre- and post-assessment. We use the school DRAs because they help us assess, since it's just me up there, and by observations and classroom involvement. So I'll give you a personal story of a boy I had this year. He actually started my summer program. You can tell he had never had anybody really read to him or anything. He didn't even know how to spell his name. When he first came to me, he couldn't identify any letters, even in his own name. He couldn't hold a pencil or scissors. He had never played with clay or Play-Doh because he didn't have any kind of texture type control over his hands. By having him in the summer program, I was able to notify the school of his possible needs. He needed some occupational therapy and one-on-one interventions. So once the school started, we were able to sign him up for our extended day program so he could receive extra help. But with the only one OT person for the whole school district, he never received OT through the school district. We were able to connect with the OT person and the mom. and able to get a plan for him and be able to send home things for him to work with. And now, just last week at our last class, he was able to actually hold a pencil, write his name. He knows half the alphabet, which is huge for him. So that's a great story for him. So we're hoping to be able to continue with our early childhood work, but we'd also like to add some more transitional classes. We really need to be able to provide a continuum throughout the elementary years, not just drop them after kindergarten. Being able to provide continued support to third grade would really help transition youth from learning to read to reading to learn, which is a huge transition that we need to be able to overcome. After third grade, we'd like to do more transition into social skills, how to have friendships, mediation, transition into middle school, and this helps make them successful and productive members of society. We used to be able to do a girls' circle for fifth graders on friendship at lunchtime, and it started out with maybe like three girls, and by the end of the year, I had 30 girls at lunch. And talking with the principals and the school staff, mm-hmm. it was huge. They didn't have all the drama during recess. Mm-hmm. The girls got along a lot better. Then when they hit that middle school age, they knew how to cope with their peers. So it was really great.
Tough age.
Yeah.
Okay. Next.
My name is Ashley Carroll. I work at Estacada Junior High as the prevention coordinator there. And I do a lot of the after-school activities, the homework club. We had 57 students regularly attending homework club. So I was able to have a teacher. Oh, sorry. I'm kind of loud. We were able to have a teacher help with homework club. That way they were getting the accurate help that they needed. And it helps to have a teacher there because with other courses, I don't always know what's going on in the classrooms, but teachers tend to talk and they know what the others are doing, so it's very helpful. One challenge we're really having in Estacada is there's a lot of cutting. And there's not a lot of resources for that. We do get Trillium Family Services. There's a one part-time person that comes out and will do some therapy, some counseling with students. But that is definitely a challenge. So I am working with a couple administrators to come up with something that doesn't advertise it but helps them work through the issues of it. It's truly sad. However, we do have a success story of a young man that I didn't realize he was supposed to be on my caseload because communication can sometimes get dropped, but he did, I want to say in November, came onto my caseload. He was prone to hurting himself when he didn't get like his way or he was frustrated. And I learned that by having to call an ambulance because he had busted his head open. Because his girlfriend walked away and didn't give him an answer. Like, these are junior high kids. It's, you know, their lives are, it's right now, you know. So one good thing from that, though, is after having to do that with him and work with him weekly, he now is passing all his classes, doesn't miss school, and will be going on as an actual freshman, which is huge for him. And he hasn't hurt himself in 5 months. So that, I mean, that's big. But he's also seen a Trillium. We've been able to give him other resources than just, you know, I'm not a licensed therapist, so I can't go beyond the means of what I have. But we were able to partner with other people, and he's got the help he needs, and he's doing great. One thing we do have is steering meetings monthly with other partners like the juvenile system. Tanya Kramer comes out from juvenile department. Tiffany Hicks from Family Youth Services. Then my current administrator, my boss. We all get together and we kind of brainstorm on those stronger cases of what can we do to help these kids. And then also what can we do in the future to help my core kids, you know, in general. So I love the work that I do. It can be frustrating with not always having, you know, the means to be able to do what you feel is necessary for the kids. But I'm going to keep rambling, so I'm going to stop there.
Okay, if we can move along, and then we'll have some time for questions.
Hello. My name is Albert Garcia, and I serve as a prevention specialist and a family resource coordinator for Todos Juntos at Malala River Middle School. Mm-hmm. Our principal, Mike Nelson in Malala, I really wanted to be here as well. wanted to emphasize the importance to our that our programs have on the success of this school. But it is the last week of school, and so he couldn't be down here. But he wanted me to mention that in 2014, the Secretary of State Office recognized Molalla River Middle School as one of the top 10 schools for narrowing the achievement gap in federally identified subgroups.
Excellent.
50% of Molalla River School middle school students are low income. So subsequently, many of the kids that we serve are low income, minorities as well, and at kids that are at risk. So our organization most definitely had a hand in the school earning that recognition, and Mr. Nelson has said many times that his school just wouldn't be as successful without us, so it's something that we take pride in. I currently run two after-school Lego robotics groups, and if you're not familiar with that, it's a challenging STEM activity that is gaining tons of popularity amongst grade school, middle school kids, even high school kids. It allows kids to build and program small-scale robots, and then they compete with them in tournaments. So it's a really cool activity that the kids really love it. They just feel like they accomplish something each time they build a robot, and then they're able to make it do different things. They feel really, really good. They feel like they're engineers, really, at that point. So activities like this, along with prevention and gender-specific curriculum-based groups, provide our kids positive and productive outlets, while also building teamwork, of course, and camaraderie amongst each other. You know, they also help to answer many of the challenges and questions about life that these teens have at such an impressionable, influential age. It's a tough year, tough years in the middle school years. But most importantly, I think, you know, I want to emphasize this point, that Todos Juntos and its programs are so beneficial to the success of these kids because the life skills and the positive character traits, I think, that we teach are often not provided through the normal school requirements. You know, it's not math and reading and writing, but it's a lot to do with the kind of foundation that these kids have moving down the line. So without our programs, I believe these youth are starting their journey of life without a very important resource. So the addition of our programs to just normal school requirements, I think, are very important.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the panelists? Representative Reardon.
Mr. Garcia, you used an interesting term, and I don't understand it in today's context. What is gender-specific curriculum nowadays?
Well, some of them have touched on it. There are groups called Boys Council and Girls Circle. And gender-specific meaning it's just boys going to the boys' groups, just girls going to the girls' groups. And it is curriculum-based, so we do, you know, go through training to teach these groups. But it just revolves on growing up in today's society as a teenage boy or a teenage girl. And a lot of the challenges, obviously, that these kids deal with at the ages of 12, 13, and 14.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
More clear than what I might have imagined.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Appreciate what you guys do. It's especially you work a lot in the middle schools, and they are very trying years and really do need a lot of help. So we appreciate what you all do, and thank you for coming here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Okay, and last we have Cindy Bankson from Northwest Family Services. And we have about 10 minutes total. Or less, if we can. Thank you. Oh, no, you can move it. That's perfect.
Okay, so Chair Doherty and members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing us to come and speak. I'm a little bit nervous. I haven't presented before a subcommittee before, and I never in a million years dreamed that I would be following a circus act. I want to talk. Oh, they're gone.
They're gone. They just walked
out. I want to talk with them about partnering with us. So I'm going to talk.
And if you want to identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm Cindy Bankston. I'm the school's department manager for Northwest Family Services. And though I am from the Portland area, we serve the greater metropolitan area. I'm going to speak with you today more from a general perspective. I'll speak about the programs that we offer to serve youth and families in the Portland area. There are many nonprofits across the state that do very similar work, and though we may not be in your district, as I'm speaking and sharing with you about the need for nonprofits to partner with schools and communities, I'm sure you will be thinking of the nonprofits in your own district that are serving your constituents. Northwest Family Services is an award-winning leading provider of creative services. Our goal is to reduce poverty, and whether it is to impact the graduation rate, we know that over the long term, what we're talking about is helping people to be successful in life, and certainly reducing poverty is one goal. We create changes within the communities we serve. We do use a model for change, and that theory of change is really like starting from the end goal and then mapping backwards. So we're taking an end goal such as reducing poverty or increasing the graduation rate, and then looking at indicators or measures of success, and then stepping back yet again and looking at what interventions do we need to utilize or implement in order to impact moving forward to reach that goal. We do this through collective impact, where we partner with organizations and within the community, both government, schools, corporate, by sharing common goals and using standard measurements. That you've heard a lot, I'm sure, about collective impact recently. Why? Why can't the schools do what nonprofits are coming into the school to do? And the fact is that no one group can really serve the entire community and the needs of the students in the community. We know that 1 in 7 youth are not in school and are not working, and so we're working together with partners in the community to impact those youth so that they are not dropping out. And just from a dollars and cents perspective, in a single year, Oregon experiences over a $294 million direct fiscal burden as a result of these students' disconnection from school and work, as well as a $2.5 billion social burden that's imposed upon individuals, families, and communities. Sorry for those statistics. Those were given to us by our development director, but I know that you're looking at the financial impact of these programs or their lack thereof. So this chart, it's really hard to read, but
it is on the handout.
Oh, it's on
the back.
Okay,
page,
so just looking at how children are being served and the needs that children have, this green represents the majority of universal youth who
And you can sit back. There's 12 inches there.
Okay.
Yeah,
who need support, and we do this through various things such as after-school activities, providing like school-wide events, drug and alcohol prevention, those kinds of things. You've heard it said that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And it's really hard to measure, but we do what we can to measure the success of these programs. Toby talked about their success there. We're looking also at these the yellow zone youth, where they need a little bit more support to build resiliency. And you might ask, you know, how do students get there? Students may be reading at grade level, at grade 3, but things happen along the way. Things happen in their families that impact their ability to do well in school. So we know that through adverse childhood experiences study done by the Centers for Disease Control and Kaiser. It's an ongoing study. We know that 27% of children are in families where there's substance abuse. 23% have a parental separation or divorce situation. 19% of them also live in families where there is mental illness, and 5% of them live in families where at least one parent is incarcerated. And so these are youth who need a little bit of additional help and support outside of the classroom. Teachers are already very busy with fewer resources, and so having nonprofits on site in the schools to provide just an additional support for building resiliency is going to, over the long term, impact graduation rates and the poverty level in our state. The red zone there are students who really need intensive wraparound supports, they and their families. And we are on site at the schools providing those sorts of things, as well as referrals too. So these are some of the programs provided by Northwest Family Services. These are programs provided, green zone services, to the general population in the schools. We are also a part of the PreventNet system in Clackamas County. We provide after-school programming, summer activities, 5 weeks of daily summer activities. We provide parenting education, as well as school-wide in the classroom, suicide prevention, drug and alcohol awareness, as well as child sex trafficking awareness and other prevention services. With those students in the yellow zone, we provide some of the skill-focused groups, similar to what, actually the same curriculum that is used by Todos Juntos. It's evidence-based. We also have something called Peer Court. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that is where when a student has one infraction, they are served by a jury of their peers, as well as a peer attorney representing them. I was visiting Rod Monroe's office about a week or two ago, and there was a young woman who said, "Oh, yes, I know Northwest Family Services. I was involved in Peer Court," and I remembered her. She was dressed very similarly. She was a student attorney in our Peer Court.
And well, I work with the Peer Court in Tigard, and, of course, then they come to me after they've been sentenced.
Oh,
me at the library. Oh,
I think it's just an amazing
it's a wonderful program. Wonderful
and
program.
So it was really fun to see an alum of our program, mm-hmm. actually now as a legislative assistant. So we do one-on-one case coordination. We also match children of incarcerated parents with mentors for one-on-one support. We have family resource coordination where families are supported with resources that they need. And again, parent education, coaching, and additional supports. We have a program called Parenting Inside Out, where it's 12 weeks long, twice a week, where parents who are involved in the court system take parenting classes to be able to become parents again. And then Red Zone Services, we provide mental health support for youth who have been screened as indicating that they are experiencing suicidal ideation or they're having suicidal thoughts. We provide navigation support for families involved in DHS. We actually have alcohol and drug treatment based in the schools. So if a student is having an addiction problem or a substance abuse problem, we have someone right on staff in the school. Parents aren't having to figure out a way to take time off from work to take their child for drug treatment. They're able to receive that right on site in schools. We're in about 5 schools in Clackamas County. And again, this is a program that's funded through Care Oregon, the CCO. And so just in general, about nonprofits and how they serve your communities, they're really owned by no one. There's no owner. They're really owned by the community. We serve 20,000 people annually, and we believe all people are due fairness, dignity, and respect. We utilize evidence-based programs and services whenever possible. We feel it's important to collect the data to show that the programs that we're using work. And we also believe that, yes, we must have qualitative and quantitative information. And I would just like to say you are all invited to come out and see one of our school programs, or I encourage you to visit program in your own community so that you can see how these programs work in your community to support and serve your youth.
Thank you very much. Any questions, comments? Representative Frederick, or Representative Reardon. I get you two mixed up.
I know, we look so much alike. I have toured this. I'm proud to say that it's in my district, and Cindy was kind enough to give me the tour. But what I didn't get, I mean, you look at all these services, is how it's so integrated into the school. So I hope you picked up on that. You don't go there and visit just to see all the flocks of people in desk doing programs. They're out in the community. So in a way, it was almost, you know, disappointing, not, you know, that I didn't see more what was going on. So I need to get back and visit.
Please,
to get
please
out
come.
And get into the schools a little bit more.
Yes, so actually we do have staff on site in the schools. That perhaps that wasn't communicated clearly and directly. Formerly, we had full-time staff working day in and day out. You know, just another set of eyes, another caring adult working with students one-on-one. Our funding's been cut in recent years. We're half-time now in three of our schools, and where we had someone full-time, that school site recently was not funded. We just missed the cutoff. Yes, the goal is to embed, I guess you could say, staff in the schools.
Okay, we're going to have to cut off questions because we have our next panel has to come leave at 2:30, so we don't want to cut that off. So real quick, a 40-second question. Okay, if not, thank you so very much for what you guys do. It's a great great service to all of the kids and the families in hopefully more than Clackamas County.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, with that, I close the informational hearing on nonprofit programs and open up an informational hearing on the superintendent candidate. And so we have Mr. Capps, Mr. Saxon, Dr. Noor. Welcome, at least Mr. Saxon, for the last time. Because after this, our committee meeting. So,
thank you. I guess I'll start it off. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lindsay Capps, education policy advisor to Governor Kate Brown. And on behalf of Governor Brown, I wanted to thank the committee and the committee chair for the opportunity to introduce Dr. Salam Noor, her nominee for Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. I wanted just to talk briefly today a little bit about Dr. Noor and how she made this choice, which was largely in consultation with legislative leaders and education leaders in the field, getting your feedback on who would be the right person to carry on the work at the department. In making that decision, the governor was looking for somebody who shared her vision and the vision, I think, of this legislature and of the state of a seamless education system from cradle to career. Someone with proven on-the-ground leadership in our schools and school communities achieving better outcomes for students. Someone with deep expertise in education policy, strong management skills to lead the Department of Education. Someone to carry on the tireless leadership of Rob Saxton in the, guiding the department to be an even stronger partner to Oregon schools in ensuring the success of every student and the really appropriate and clear focus that Dr. Saxton gave to equity in that work. And lastly, the governor was looking for somebody to be accountable, transparent, and in serving the people of Oregon, doing that with integrity. So the governor believes that we have selected that candidate and Dr. Knorr and brings all of these assets to the job and look forward to his service. A few words about Dr. Knorr. Prior to joining the Oregon Higher Education Coordinating Commission in November, as its director of academic planning and policy, Dr. Knorr served 6 years as assistant superintendent and chief academic officer for the Salem-Keizer School District, the state's second largest and one of its most diverse school districts. And he served here at the state level as an assistant superintendent of public instruction at the Oregon Department of Education, where he led a number of student-centered initiatives that continue today. In Salem-Keizer, it's notable that Dr. Knorr was integral in implementing effective strategies in our schools, improving outcomes for students, including expanding full-day preschool, especially to underserved students, development of an early college high school model, which is in existence today, a new career technical education center in cooperation with local industry, and new program models to increase English language acquisition for emerging multilingual students. All challenges that we face across school districts in the state and priorities that I know many of us and certainly the governor care about. At the state level, Dr. Knorr led ODE's Closing the Achievement Gap initiative, drawing attention to disparities between students of color and white students. He was involved in the Oregon Literacy Initiative, which resulted in a statewide literacy framework that is in use in our schools today. And he oversaw the revision and redesign of the Oregon diploma and graduation requirements. Beyond this, throughout his career, Dr. Knorr has shown that he can engage diverse stakeholders in an authentic way and deliver results. And the governor is excited and confident in the leadership he will bring to the department. So we appreciate the opportunity today to have this conversation with the committee. And thank you, Chair Doherty.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Dr. Knorr.
Thank you. I think I get to go second.
Are you next, sir?
Certainly. Yeah. Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Frederick, members of the committee, for the record, Ron Saxon, Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. It is a pleasure to be here today to introduce my replacement as Deputy Superintendent, Dr. Salam Knorr. It's a little bit unnerving to contemplate stepping away from any position. I've been honored to serve in the capacity as Deputy Superintendent, and truly it's been really important and fulfilling work for me. Over the past 3 years, the Department of Education has done some very good work, and the people at the department have performed at a high level. Their efforts around 40-40-20, the strategic initiatives, creation of a P20 system, improving instructions based in standards, and becoming a service-based organization, I think, have really been stellar. And the people at the department who worked so diligently on that really are deserving of great credit for their work. I've known Salam for well over a decade, and I think it actually is about 15 years, I calculated yesterday, and I've had the opportunity to work with him when he was at the department and I was in a school district, and vice versa, when I was at the department and he was in a school district, and all of those interactions have been wonderful. He knows work from a district perspective, and he knows the department, cares deeply about kids and the education that shapes their futures. He's committed to equity and all of the important work that we have underway directed at our aggressive 40-40-20 target. When he was announced as my replacement, I was confident he would hit the ground running and do a wonderful job with the vast experiences that he has both in districts and at the department. And now, as we've been partnering on the transition and had lots of opportunity to meet and talk, I'm confident that has been, my confidence has been fully reinforced, and I know that he's going to do just a wonderful job. It's therefore a real pleasure for me to officially introduce to you Dr. Salam Knorr. Salam.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Springer, and Vice Chair Frederick, and members of the committee, thank you so much for inviting me to be with you today. For the record, currently I'm the, for the record, Salam Knorr, first of all, currently Director of Academic Planning and Policy with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission and the Governor's nominee to be the Deputy Superintendent for Public Instruction with the Oregon Department of Education, following the wonderful leadership of Rob Saxton. I want to thank my colleagues for their kind introductions, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be with them here today, and most importantly, to have an opportunity to meet you all. I am really, really honored to have been nominated by the governor to lead the Department of Education and to lead our education system pre-K through 12.
I'm honored to be able to serve Oregon students and schools and communities in this new role. I'm looking forward to working with the legislature, working with the State Board of Education, working with education, business, community partners throughout the state of Oregon to improve to continue to improve the opportunities for all of our students, to continue to support our students and teachers and schools in every way possible. Lindsay shared with you my background, but I want to emphasize to you that I have over 20 years of experience in education, and that spans the continuum from pre-K to higher education. I look forward to bringing that experience to the Oregon Department of Education and to utilize that experience in leading at a state level and working with a variety of partners, both in the state of Oregon and nationally, as a matter of fact. My most recent experience in Salem-Keizer have helped me realize the growing diversity of our schools and students throughout the state of Oregon and the importance of keeping the focus on student achievement at all times. Even when we were going through some very tough economic times, we never wavered on that goal, on that objective, which is student achievement, and that helped us get through some really difficult times and situations. I recognize the challenges ahead, and I'm committed to working with partners to expand the opportunities for students so they are ready for school, so they have the knowledge and skills to navigate our education system, so they can read by third grade, so they can graduate college and career ready. And we provide them with the skills and the knowledge and the experience to be prepared for whatever faces them after high school, and to be ready for what comes next, and to be prepared academically and for life. From my current experience working with the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, I am so ever more convinced that we have to prepare our students to graduate college and career ready. They have to have the skills to move directly to the workforce if they choose to do so. They have to have the knowledge and skills to move directly to a community college, a university, a career school, private school, you name it. And we have to make sure that they have those skills to be successful. We have way too many students that don't complete high school, too many students that actually participate in our higher ed institutions and don't make it past their first term or the first year. So we have a lot of challenges in that area, but we also have tremendous opportunities. I think the legislature has invested in opportunities that will increase student engagement, such as CTE and STEM, and these are opportunities that will make learning relevant, it will make learning exciting, it will make it meaningful for students, it will keep them in school, and will establish pathways for them to pursue once they're done with school. I'm also committed to continuing to work on the equity agenda for our state. I think that's an integral goal for achieving our 40-40-20, for increasing our graduation rates, and helping every student in our communities and our state be successful. So I'm committed to expanding the opportunities for underserved students and closing the achievement gap. I think we've made progress in that area, but the achievement gap continues to persist both here in Oregon and nationally. So I share the legislature's and the governor's urgency to improve outcomes for students, investing in early learning strategies, and increasing student engagement through STEM and CTE, as I mentioned earlier, are ways that we can improve our graduation rate. I believe, finally, that it's really, really imperative that we maintain high standards and high expectations for all students and do everything we possibly can, working together with the legislature, state board, parents, community-based organizations, education partners, and all entities that have a stake in education to do what's best for our students and what's best for our state. So I really appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today, and I welcome any questions or comments that you wish to share.
Okay, thank you. Are there any comments? Any questions? Representative Frederick.
Only just one comment. We have worked together now almost as long as you worked with him. Actually, longer, I think, actually, because I was when I was working for the Portland
Schools.
Portland
Public, yes.
We had a lot of contact. Glad to see you in this position. I'm sure we'll be talking quite a bit.
Absolutely.
I am more and more convinced that we need to begin to deal with a new bit of language, because some of it has in fact become old. And we need to be talking not just about an achievement gap, we need to be talking about a comprehensive education system. and how everyone gets to be part of that. So if we can begin that process, I think that will help a great deal. I've been digging through my debris pile of material from Portland Public Schools, from the State Board of Education and everything else, and I came upon, and I'll bring it in to you. You may have remembered seeing it, documents from the early 1990s, mm-hmm. where we were talking about college to career readiness,
right. yeah.
and those kinds of things at that time. And I kept coming, reading that, saying, wait a minute, we're using the same language, and we haven't really moved anything with that language. So it's time for us to begin another process. So it'd be good to talk with you. I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, and I welcome the opportunity to do so.
Any other questions, comments? Representative Rudin.
Well, I just want to reflect on Representative Frederick's remark, because we agree we had some phenomenal concepts in the early 90s. We didn't fund them then. And we're not doing much better now. I hope that we can provide the level of support that you need to be successful, because I absolutely so much believe in what you're doing. I'm very happy that you mentioned STEM and CTE a couple of times in your comments. You got my vote right there. We have to do a better job in what we're doing. And I say we. And you. I look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else? Okay, and kind of on a personal note, I would like to thank Rob Saxton. I've worked with him before on various levels, professional and I have, in my career working with OEA and as a teacher, have worked with dozens and dozens of administrators, and I don't think you'll find somebody who is as passionate as he is about children, absolutely. About learning, about the classroom, and about teachers. And the one comment is that every month when his newsletter would come out, he would always thank the educators that were teaching the kids. So I appreciate that very much. I know you come from a family of educators, but you are an educator at heart, and I truly appreciate all that you've done for us.
Thank you, Chair Doherty.
Can we do a
high praise?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're here. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. And we look forward to working with you very much, sir.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Doherty, and I really appreciate the opportunity to meet you all, and I look forward to working with you in a very collaborative and focused manner. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Thank you so very much. Okay, with that, I close the informational hearing on superintendent candidates and open up a work session on Senate Bill 820A.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -8 amendments, A8 amendments to SB 820A, dated May 28, 2015.
Okay, and Frederick moves to adopt the -8 amendments to Senate Bill 820A, dated May 28, 2015. Is there a discussion, and would you like to read and tell us what those are?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
This is going to be that.
Senate Bill 820A, the engrossed measure, allows public charter schools to implement a weighted lottery. The A8s sunset the authorization for the weighted lotteries in the 2020-2021 school year, and just prior to that, mandated a review and report on the implementation of weighted lotteries.
Okay, so it's basically sunset.
Sunset plus a report.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
I guess I get to do this now. Chair Doherty, I move Senate Bill 820A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves Senate Bill 820A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Teo, could you read the roll, please?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Caluso?
Aye.
Representative
Bearden?
Aye.
Representative Bolton?
Aye.
Representative Bretto?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair Doherty? Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and we'll have Representative Huffman carry this. Okay, thank you. With that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 280A. And 820. I'm a little number dyslexic here. 820A. And with that, we've got a couple of things for the good of the order. I don't want to hear moaning on this, but we will not be meeting on Friday or Monday. I know. The next thing that we've got is actually a scheduled field trip. We had talked about this to the Oak Creek facility, which is an Oregon Youth Authority. And on your dais is a memo that has all the information that you need. And I know that some of you have judish and things at 3 o'clock, so we'll either have a van, we'll have a van going out. So if you need to be back here before 3, even though we should be, you can drive out. This is a facility in Albany. It's about 40 minutes away. And so we'll have all of that. And I think the memo tells everything that's there. So if you want to let us know if you're going to be there, it is 2 days before the young ladies graduate from high school, and out of the 50 at the facility, 22 of them are eligible and will be graduating from high school Friday night.
Wow.
So
nice.
That Friday night. So this is kind of a special trip, but that's it.
Okay. Thank you.
So with that, I adjourn House Education. With that, I adjourn House Education.